This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Connor with some speed down the right side. Had it get away from him. Stays on it. Wheeler has it. To Scheifele. Scores! Mark Scheifele on the cross-ice pass from Blake Wheeler. Gets one past Juuse Saros. And the Winnipeg Jets come into Nashville and take Game 7 by a final score of 5-1. And the Winnipeg Jets, for the first time in history, will advance to the Western Conference Championship against the Vegas Golden Knights. We're going to Vegas, baby. Except we're going home first.
Dennis Bayak with the call. Thursday night, the Winnipeg Jets defeat the Nashville Predators by a 5-1 margin. They win the series 4-3. They move on to the Western Conference Final. I hope the whiplash effect isn't too dramatic. A quick turnaround from Game 7 to Game 1 later on this evening here at Bell MTS Place. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning on TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we welcome you to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio. And let me tell you, there is a lot of news and audio. You can check it all out on our website, IllegalCurve.com. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. We welcome you to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day here on TSN 1290. Gentlemen, we're of course all over the Jets and the Golden Knights, which gets underway in about 9 hours time from now. But before we look forward to tonight's game, we have to look back at Thursday night, the dramatic conclusion to the Jets-Predators series. We knew that it was a close series. We knew that it was going to be a tight, hard-fought battle. It ended up going 7 games, and the Winnipeg Jets were absolutely dominant in Game 7, certainly helped by a woeful goaltending performance by Pekka Rinne of the Nashville Predators.
Yeah, there's absolutely no doubt, boys, that Pekka Rinne was not good in that game, and he was shaky throughout the series. And when I look back at this series and the Jets defeating the Predators in 7 games, you have to look at how the Jets played in Nashville, because Nashville is one of the hardest arenas to play in.
Allegedly.
If you ask the players, and the players have been polled about this,
yeah,
Nashville is always at the top of the list. Now, Drew, that Vegas has come into the league, T-Mobile Arena is up there, but I mean, Bridgestone Arena is always up there, Dave, as far as one of the toughest arenas to play in. And the Jets managed to go into that arena,
yeah,
4 times,
yeah,
win 3 of those games.
Yeah.
And in those 3 games, Drew,
yeah,
they outscored Nashville 15-4.
15-4. Yeah.
And there were some empty net goals there. But still, no, I mean,
which you shouldn't apologize for, because that means you have to be in the position to score empty net goals.
Absolutely. And after Game 6, I mean, we all left that arena, and there were a lot of depressed Jets fans. And we talked about it on the NHL This Week show, Drew. We really didn't know what to expect going into Game 7. Were we going to see a lower-scoring game? Was it going to be a tight game? Early on, it was more of a low-scoring game, but then obviously the game opened up. But those 2 goals early on, you know, Pekka Rinne has to have that first one especially. And give Tyler Myers credit putting it on the net there from a bad angle. And they obviously had the scouting report on Rinne, Dave, but you know, shortly after that, what was it, 2 minutes after, Paul Stastny gets the rebound, his own rebound, and then all of a sudden it's 2-0, Rinne's out of the net, he's chased, Juuse Saros comes in, and sure, P.K. Subban scores late in the first period with that power play goal, but the game was pretty much over after that, especially when Mark Scheifele scored late in the second period to make it 3-1. But boy, when you're on home ice, you give up those 2 quick goals, and they were 2 bad goals that your goalie has to stop. I mean, that's really tough to come back from that. But, yeah, that's going to be the story, guys, for me. For this best-of-7 series between the Jets and the Preds, it's going to be how well the Jets played in Nashville, stealing 3 games. Because, as we know, Nashville played very differently when they were on the road in this series.
Absolutely. It was a tale of two teams for the Predators between how they played in Winnipeg, where they were able to get an early lead and just bottle everything up and shut the Jets down, versus their performance on home ice, which was much more open. And it makes sense. I mean, you can't play that defensive trap style. It's got a short shelf life, and you can get away with it on the road, but it's a lot harder to play that style at home, Dave. And the Winnipeg Jets were able to take advantage of, I mean, as we said, some just horrendous goaltending by Pekka Rinne. And they, every time this year we've counted the Jets out or thought that maybe they're going to go in a bit of a tailspin, this team has bounced back. That's almost what's most impressive to me, is their resiliency all season long in the face of adversity, not letting it phase them really, and immediately putting themselves back on an upward trajectory.
Yeah, I can't remember off the top of my head what exactly their record is, but I know that it was very good when they were had come off a loss. And specifically, Connor Hellebuck as well was also very good after losing his previous game. So you knew that the Jets were going to have a bounce back game. And for me, when I knew Rene was in trouble, was that first rush by Kyle Connor, because he wasn't clean. And in fact, I actually thought, did that beat him? Like, he looked, and it's funny because after the game, Pekka said that he attributed that Kyle Connor save to feeling good. And I thought, but that's the heat of the moment. I don't know if he would have said the same thing upon further reflection, upon watching that save, you know, when you watch the video, because to me, that he just didn't look comfortable. And I thought Kyle Connor beat him, which is funny because, you know, Kyle Connor, as the player's coming down, he's a guy who plays with speed. You know, he's going to try and do that wraparound as opposed to trying to go through the guy. So, you know, there's a good chance he's going to try that. And to me, he almost beats Rene. And I thought to myself, well, this is not a good start for him. And then the Meyer shot was awful, which he basically deserves an assist on because he put it in himself. And I thought to myself, okay, well, these guys, as soon as the Jets scored the first goal, you know, I thought the Jets were going to ride. To me, the interesting thing was just how unpredictable these games were throughout the series, sorry, because it was funny. I didn't expect a 5-1 hockey game. Like, I expected this to be a 3-2 with an empty net, or 4-2 with an empty net, or 3-2 close. Like, even overtime. Like, I was thinking, I thought if the Jets score, people asked me before, you know, the game, what do you think? I thought if the Jets score first, I think they have a very good chance of winning the game. But again, that's not, you know, some sort of like huge revelation. It's literally just like, okay. But
that's why you come here for the insight. Yeah.
But I just thought the team would be feeling good. But the Jets looked completely unflappable in Game 7. They looked phenomenal. And Nashville looked completely like they were on pins and needles and tight. And it's interesting. I mean, you know, we talked to some people and they're saying how loose the Jets were in the pregame warm-up versus Nashville, who were just
the weight of expectations.
Yeah, and just even for the first few shifts, you could kind of get that sense. And you know, P.K. Subban tries to get his group into it. You know, he scores that goal, looks at the bench, trying to fire them up. He's trying to do whatever he can to get the crowd back into it. But really, the Jets just seemed like a team that had kind of sensed some blood in the water and we're going to start circling.
Well, what was most impressive to me, I mean, you get the two early goals and both of them are lousy goals and you chase the starting goaltender. And then the game settles down a little bit because UC Saros just couldn't be as bad as Pekka Rinne was. And then Nashville gets that late goal in the first period and you think, okay, it's a 2-1 game now. Basically anybody's game. It's a one-goal game. The Jets coming out in the second period, and sure, it took them late into the second period to get that 3-1 goal by Scheifele. But the Jets came out in that second period and they dominated the period. And I think that, you know, getting the goal is the icing on the cake there. But the dominant performance by the Jets in that second period, where Nashville couldn't get anything going offensively, and the Jets were cycling them down low in their zone, you know, and just cycling them to death and controlling the flow of the game, was, I think, really where the Jets really demoralized their opponent. It's only a one-goal game for the majority of that period, and it can turn on a flash. But Connor Hellebuck is standing tall in the net on the limited opportunities the Predators do get, and the Jets just keep the puck in the Predators' zone, and they just grind and grind and grind the opponent down. And looked at that end of the second period, after the Jets made it 3-1, that the Predators were a team that were just beaten.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Drew. They definitely didn't take the foot off the gas in the second period. They were the better team in the second, and that's a testament to the way they've played defensively in the series, with the exception of, you know, maybe one or two games in the series. You know, guys, we talked about Paul Stastny earlier, and he obviously was a big story of Game 7, but I thought a big factor in this series, a line that was much better for the Jets, was the second line. And we talked about it going into the series. Kyle Turris was not very good in the first round.
For the Predators.
Yeah, and I didn't think he was much of a factor. So you're talking about Kyle Turris, Craig Smith, and Kevin Fiala. That's the Predators' second line. Stastny, Laine, and Ehlers outplayed that line badly in the series. And I thought that was a big factor because the top line of Johansson, Arvidsson, and Forsberg was excellent.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the Predators' best line, and you'd expect it to be. But, you know, Scheifele scored 7 goals in Nashville. He's up to 11 goals in the playoffs. He was terrific in Game 7 and all throughout this series. But for me, it really came down to depth scoring, right? And, you know, we mentioned P.K. Subban earlier. What did he have, 4 goals in the series? But aside from P.K., they didn't get any other goals from any defensemen. So you're talking about no goals for Roman Josi or Ryan Ellis or Matthias Ekholm.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I thought that they were overwhelmed at times, as you mentioned, by the pressure the Jets were putting on them in their zone. And the Jets did get contributions from their defensemen. You think of Game 3 with Jacob Trouba and Dustin Byfuglien, and then Game 7, Tyler Myers gets the opening goal, right? So I thought that the Jets were doing a better job of getting their defensemen into the rush and into the play and contributing offensively. So, you know, that's what it really came down to. The goaltending was clearly in the Jets' favor. Hellebuck outplayed Rene, but for me, aside from that top line, the Predators just didn't have much going. We know how good the Bonino, Sissons, Watson line was in round one, but in round two against the Jets, I just didn't think they were as effective.
Certainly not offensively. They threw the body around a bit, and Austin Watson was involved physically, but the offensive side of that game for what was the best line against the Colorado Avalanche certainly was stymied by the Winnipeg Jets offensively. You know, we're going to have all summer to you know, talk about the Predators and where they go from here, but let me ask you guys this.
Well, they're still in a great position.
Can you come back with Pekka Rinne? I mean, before the series started, Ezzy, I expressed my concern to you. I don't remember if it was on the Saturday show or if it was on the midweek show.
No, I think it was the Saturday show.
It was the Saturday show. I said that Pekka Rinne concerned me. If you were a fan of the Nashville Predators, the performance of Pekka Rinne in the playoffs, both in the first round against the Avalanche, in the previous round last year in the Stanley Cup final against the Penguins, and I think it was borne out with the results of what you saw in the round against the Jets. How can you come back with Pekka Rinne and say we have confidence that he is going to be able to lead us back to the promised land?
Yeah, and I don't have the answer to that, guys. I mean, he is coming off of a season in which he was nominated, or he was one of the finalists for the Vezina Trophy. There's a good chance Pekka Rinne wins the Vezina Trophy.
Deservingly so. He had a great regular season.
Right, but as you said, last year in the Stanley Cup playoffs against Pittsburgh in the final, he struggled, and he struggled not only in the series against the Jets. Early on in that series between the Preds and the Avalanche,
mm-hmm.
Pekka Rinne was not good.
He was not.
Right? He had some good games and he had some bad games. He was inconsistent.
Yeah.
So I don't know the answer to that. I think, you know, there is a chance maybe that they decide to go in another direction. But when you're talking about a goaltender that has been so good for you for so long and he's coming off a great regular season, maybe you give him one more season. But I don't know. I mean, it was a really disappointing Game 7, and I would say an overall disappointing playoffs for Rinne.
It's hard to have confidence in him as we, you know, if you're a Nashville Predators fan going forward. In any event, though, for the Winnipeg Jets, that's not for them to be worried about. They're worried now about the Western Conference Final, which gets started later on this evening at Bell MTS Place. When we come back, we shift our focus to that series, an in-depth, comprehensive preview of the Winnipeg Jets versus the Vegas Golden Knights. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Winnipeg Sun, he's a good friend of the program. We're pleased to welcome back Ted Wyman. Ted, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, fellas. How are you?
Doing very well, Ted. How about yourself?
Oh, real well. Just got in back from Nashville around midnight last night, and a little sleep and right back to the rink this morning. It's a pretty fun time of the year.
Yeah, no rest for the wicked whatsoever, Ted. And we'll talk to you, of course, about the Jets and the Golden Knights series, which puck drop in a little less than 9 hours from now. Got to look back, though. You just mentioned you came back from Nashville on last night. You know, having spent another sort of 24 hours there, what's the mood in Nashville? Are they just sort of a bit stunned with what the turnaround and the turnabout of events was, given that they had Game 7 on home ice, all the confidence in the world after their 4-0 Game 6 victory?
Oh, absolutely stunned and bummed. I would say the people of Nashville were geared up to win the Stanley Cup this year. They made it to the final last year. They were the best team in the league in the regular season. I think people thought that they had a pretty good path to the Stanley Cup, but there was that one problem, and that was that they were going to have to face the second-best team in the regular season in the second round, and just like that was a problem for the Jets, it was a problem for the Predators, and it ended up being the Jets that won it. And, yeah, there was definitely some long faces amongst the faithful there. They had left the building halfway through the third period, and when that happens, you know things aren't going well.
Ted, I think a lot of people are pointing to the speed of these two teams and that being a big factor in the Western Conference Final. But when you look at these two rosters, especially the forward lines, I think the Jets' depth really comes in once you get to the third and fourth forward lines. To you, is that really going to be one of the big determining factors in this series, the Jets' scoring depth?
Oh, absolutely. But I think it's also their defensive depth. I think, you know, the Jets have a guy like Tyler Myers and their third defense pairing, which just gives them an advantage over so many teams, a guy with that kind of experience and ability. And they also have, as you said, these four lines that can go out. And that was the perfect example of that four-line team in Game 7 against Nashville, where really I thought it was the fourth line of Lowry, Tanev, and Kopitar, or Armia, sorry, was on that line, but that really set the tone. They got down into the offensive zone, held the puck for over a minute, just showed Nashville, imposed their will on Nashville, did it throughout the game, and then after that you could just see that all the lines were able to do the same thing. And when the scoring players get the puck on their stick on this team, they make it count, and that was pretty much it for Nashville. They just really didn't get a chance to ever get into that game, and of course that had a lot to do with Pekka-Rinne letting in those two goals in the first period, but you know, the Jets really were the stronger team on that night.
Now, Ted, there's been a lot of talk about experience coming into the playoffs for the Jets. I don't know how much talk there's going to be now that they've won two series about that. But, you know, there has been that conversation going about. And just how important has the leadership group of the Jets been for a lot of the younger players on the team?
Well, I don't know if you got a chance to see my column in the Sun.
That's why I'm asking the question, Teddy.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was pointing to. And the numbers just bear it out. You know, you look at Bufflin wears an A, Scheifele wears an A, and Blake Wheeler wears the C. Those guys combined for 30 points in the series. You can't ask for more in terms of production from your top-end guys. They were all spot on the entire series. They played great hockey, and they carried the team. I think Paul Stastny has to be thrown in there as well because he also had a fantastic series. He carried his own line, really. Because you cannot really say that Lion and Ehlers were big-time performers in that series. They weren't. But Paul Stastny was one of the best players, and he was the best player in Game 7. And it just shows that value of experience. Those guys, Mark Scheifele, I call him a veteran, of course. The guy's only 25, but he has been around for a while. And then you've got Wheeler, Bufflin, and Stastny, who are all in their 30s, who really are the drivers of this team right now in this playoff run. And they're so lucky to have those guys because this team is very young. It would be too young to handle the magnitude of this if it weren't for that balance that they get from those guys that provide the experience.
Ted Wyman, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're talking about the Jets ahead of the Jets Golden Knights Game 1 later tonight at Bell MTS Place. Teddy, the goaltending battle in round two was certainly one that everyone paid a lot of attention to, and there's no question that Connor Hellebuyck outplayed Pekka Rinne. This series, it's also going to be in the spotlight. Marc-Andre Fleury has been absolutely tremendous so far in the playoffs. 9.51 save percentage, 1.53 goals against average. How do the Jets go about making Marc-Andre Fleury's life a little more miserable?
Boy, is that ever a good question, because that guy has been incredible in the playoffs. The guy's already got 3 Stanley Cup rings, and yet there he is playing, I think, better hockey than he's ever played here with the Vegas Misfits, as they call themselves, the Golden Misfits. He really has done something special in making this franchise work. You know, they're a good team. They're solid. They're well put together. They're fast. They're built for today's NHL. But that, you got that number one reason back there, and that is Marc-Andre Fleury. Huge challenge for the Jets. How do you do it? Well, Winnipeg does have more offensive weapons than the San Jose Sharks. It does have more offensive weapons than the Los Angeles Kings, who really didn't have much of any. This is not going to be easy for Vegas to keep Winnipeg off the score sheet, but I think the number one thing for Vegas is going to be not to give Winnipeg the good looks, especially on the power play. They're going to have to be disciplined, because if Winnipeg can get on that power play, I don't care how good Marc-Andre Fleury is, Winnipeg's going to get its chances with the firepower they put out there. And I think traffic in front of the net has to be a huge factor for the Jets. They, you know, they're pretty good at that, but they don't always do it. And when they don't, you can see what happens. I think the games against Nashville where they lost at home, they didn't do a very good job of getting any traffic in front of Pekka Rinne. Rinne was able to see everything. The Jets kind of, you know, just didn't get the chances that they had been in the other games of the series, and they lost those games. So I think that's going to be the formula that they're going to have to work on.
Ted, how big of a factor do you think James Neal is going to be in the series? We know he can put the puck in the net, scored 25 goals during the regular season, and we know he's got that playoff experience, but when you consider how he likes to play that physical game, do you think he's going to be a player that the Jets are going to have to look out for in this series?
I honestly think so, yes. And I'll tell you, I thought, and I was backed up by lots of opinions amongst the people in Nashville, that was a thing that the Predators missed, was James Neal. You know, that guy is he's a good playoff performer. He's a good hockey player. He has done well against the Jets in the past. I think he's definitely going to be a factor. And you know, there's a lot of things that Vegas brings to the table, but when you've got a guy like that that's been down the road a few times before, I think that's going to be a big help for them. And yeah, that's a guy that Jets absolutely have to watch out for. I don't know exactly how you make sure he doesn't get what he needs, but you know, the looks that he needs. But the Jets, I think they can, you know, they're kind of built to handle just about anything. The one thing that Vegas brings that would concern me and probably concerns them is just that team speed that has helped them be successful throughout the season and made them play pretty well against the Jets in the regular season.
You know, Ted, it's interesting. We always look for players who rise to the challenge in the playoffs and are able to handle the stress that it brings. Mark Scheifele set an NHL record for most road goals in a series, last series against Nashville, scoring 7. He's the third, I think, favorite for the Conn Smythe voting right now. Just how impressed have you been by Mark Scheifele's elevation of his game?
Oh, very impressed. And his demeanor as well. And I think that's a Blake Wheeler byproduct as well, because Wheeler has been made it so obvious to these guys, and also Paul Stastny, that the key to success in the playoffs right now is to be cool and calm, to not let the last game bother you, to not look ahead too far past the next game, to just live in the moment. And that's what he's done. And that's what Mark Scheifele is doing as well. And you can see almost the emulation of his captain in all the things that he does. Plus, they really click well together out on the ice. And having a guy like Wheeler feeding you pucks certainly makes life easy for a sniper like Scheifele, who's done just a fantastic job of putting pucks in that. That was a really, really great series by him. I mean, you really haven't ever, you've never seen one like it exactly before because of that record for road goals. And you've never, and you know, you certainly haven't seen anything like that in Winnipeg's history, where a guy steps up and just continues to pour the puck into the net. He really was fantastic, wasn't he, guys?
Ted Wyman, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Teddy, we'll let you go on this last question. The Jets had success against a vaunted Nashville Predators defense. You look at the Golden Knights defense, and they've certainly been successful this year, but nobody's confusing them with the Predators top four. Is that one of your key matchups entering tonight's the game one of the contest? Just how successful the Jets are able to be against a Golden Knights defense that is not as well as regarded as the Predators' defense was last series?
Yeah, I would suggest that is. personally, I have to admit, because I haven't had that many chances to see Vegas, I don't know much about that defense. I mean, it's kind of a no-name defense, isn't it, guys? But they put together a group that really gets the job done. They're all solid players. And they've obviously played very well because they play within a very good team system. And if you can move the puck in this league right now and you've got speed, you can be successful. That's how the Vegas Golden Knights are built. And obviously that is why they're in the Western Conference Final. So absolutely, how the Jets deal with that will be important. I think it goes back to a big role for the Adam Lowry line for how they make do that there. They make it really difficult for the opposition's defense to not tire during the game because you got to face those guys cycling repeatedly. If those guys are doing that, I don't know how many teams beat the Devils because it's just so difficult on their six guys back on the blue line.
Morning skate gets underway right now at Bell MTS Place. Ted Wyman is there for the Winnipeg Sun. Ted, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure, guys. Have a great day.
You too, Teddy. Thanks very much. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets Game Day on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Deflected in by Tanev. Stastny first on the puck. Stastny to the front of the net. Scores! Another sharp angle! And Paul Stastny first on the puck. Jams it from a sharp angle past Pekka-Rinne, and the Jets have a 2-0 lead.
From Thursday night's Game 7, the second Winnipeg Jets goal, Paul Stastny depositing it past Pekka-Rinne, ending his night nice and early. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN 1290. This is Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets Game Day. And this segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Remember, if you're looking for a place to catch the game, Bernstein's Deli's got the big screen TVs. They've got the full audio. They've got great food and drink specials. It's hashtag Hockey Night at Bernstein's. Check them out for more information. Bernsteinsdeli.com. The Jets and the Golden Knights tonight, game one of the Western Conference Finals. Two teams that have a little familiarity with each other. They played each other three times during the regular season. Haven't played since early February, so it's been a number of months between these two games, between games for these two teams. The Jets went 1-1-1. The Golden Knights 2-1. Very even, 12 goals for the Knights, 11 for the Jets in the head-to-head series. Looking at the Golden Knights roster, it sort of strikes me as very similar to the Predators in that they have a real dominant first line in Marchessault, Carlson, and Smith, and we know how great that line has been all year. And then they have a second line that has some offensive talent, you know, with Perron and with Holla and James Neal. And then their bottom lines don't really usually aren't counted on for a ton of offense, much like the Predators had that dominant first line, and then as you went further down their lineup, the offense sort of dried up. Similarities
in the second round.
In the second round, yeah. Obviously, in the first round, the Watson, Bonino, Sissons line was dominant, but in the second round, I mean, even when they were great in the first round, you never really thought of them as a offensively dynamic line. It's really going
maybe
to be...
Maybe not dynamic, but it's a good line. I mean, I think it's a credit to the Jets that they were able to stifle the Predators, especially in their home arena.
Sure.
But I think we would all agree that the Jets have more scoring depth than both the Predators and the Golden Knights.
Absolutely.
And especially the Golden Knights.
That's what I'm saying. For the Golden Knights, it really comes down to that first line for them is their catalyst. That's their offensive powerhouse. They don't get a lot of offense from the back end, and we'll talk about that throughout the course of our preview. But it's really, again, like it was Scheifele, Wheeler, and Connor up against Marchessault, Carlson, and Smith in sort of... That is one of the key matchups, especially when you look at the forward groups of these two teams.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, Drew, that you have to give the Jets the advantage, especially on the bottom two lines. But when you look at this Golden Knights team, guys, sure, William Karlsson had the career year. You know, he competed for the Rocket Richard Trophy. But you mentioned that second line, and that second line was good in both rounds for the Golden Knights. That's Holla, Perron, and Neal, as you mentioned, Drew. And, you know, they have other guys that can put the puck in the net. Alex Tuck had a career year. He's playing on that third line. Cody Eakin of Winnipeg is centering that third line. And this team does not need a lot of opportunities to score. I mean, their shooting percentage has been very high in the first two rounds. And it's not like your typical team where they need a lot of zone time and they need to get that cycle going.
Quick strike.
It's a quick strike offense. And absolutely, I mean, the Carlson, Marchessault, Smith line, the Jets are going to have to do a good job of shutting down that line. I mean, they're going to get their goals. They are absolutely going to get their goals. You're not going to be able to shut them down completely. But they do have other weapons. And, you know, I mentioned Alex Tuck even on that third line. Cody Eakin, I think, has really revived his career in Vegas after it kind of fizzled out a little bit in Dallas. But even though the Jets, Dave, have the advantage when it comes to scoring depth, I mean, this isn't necessarily a one-trick pony. I realize Drew is simplifying it down to a little bit. One line for the Vegas Golden Knights is the line that's going to really hurt you, but they do have other guys on this team that can hurt you, and it's a pretty underrated defense. I think the Jets' defense is better, but I think even though it's a no-name defense, they've done a pretty good job throughout the playoffs, and you can't underestimate them.
You know, for me, I've watched Vegas probably after the Jets the second most of all the playoff series so far because they're on later. So while I'm working on Jets-related stuff, I happen to watch usually
sure.
have those.
You're
games.
A night owl.
I'm a bit of a night owl. So the Vegas, you know, the Vegas late times between Vegas and LA and Vegas and San Jose, I never really cared because it was fine for me. But so I watched those series and I agree with you, Ezzy. I think the Vegas defense is underrated. I think that people kind of have a tendency to overlook them at their own peril because I think while they may be unheralded from the perspective of they're not Roman Josi or PK Subban or Matthias Ekholm or Ryan Ellis. Mm-hmm. The fact of the matter is these guys are very good. They've been getting it done. I really liked the way Colin Miller played that last series. I thought he was really effective against San Jose. So I just think that you can't afford to overlook the Vegas Golden Knights just because they don't have necessarily the name cachet. Because the truth is, to be honest with you, I watched that last series and I didn't think that the guys who had the name cachet, like I expected Roman Josi to be way better. I thought he was tentative in game 7. I didn't think he had a great overall series. I thought Matthias Ekholm didn't play well. I thought Ryan Ellis was good. I thought PK Subban was good. But I was expecting, I mean, remember, Roman Josi had 5 assists in that 6-5 game in the regular season against the Jets. He's a dynamic offensive player, and I just didn't think he was the guy he was. The reason I'm going back to that is just because I'm saying sometimes we have a tendency to get focused on names, and we lose focus on the guys who are playing well as a collective unit. And right now these guys are doing that and they're shutting teams down. So to me, you'll overlook this Vegas team at your own peril.
The speed in these two teams is going to be a storyline, and it already is a storyline entering game 1. We know that in the games where these two teams played against each other, we saw the speed that was on display. It was back and forth. It was up and down. Obviously the Jets have speed and can skate with anybody. What about the physicality that the Jets have that the Golden Knights don't really have, especially in their bottom six? You know, obviously if Ryan Reeves ends up coming into the lineup for the Golden Knights, he provides some physicality, but he also probably takes away from what they can do in terms of offensive transition. How much of that do you think is going to be a factor as we look at these two teams?
I think there's no doubt the Jets are a more physical team. You know, that's always going to be a factor, Drew, especially in the playoffs when you have that line of Lowry, Armia, and Kopp now, and they like to establish that forecheck, and they like to, you know, lay some hits, and we saw what Dustin Byfuglien has done throughout the playoffs, and Ben Chiarot's a physical defenseman. The Jets are a more physical team, and the Golden Knights are going to have to deal with that. From the Jets' perspective, they're not going to be too worried about anybody on the Golden Knights. I mean, they have some physical players. You mentioned Ryan Reeves. We're not sure if he's going to go in on that fourth line. There's a chance it's going to be Thomas Nosek on that fourth line. But, you know, you have, you know, the wily veteran Derek Englund, Braden McNabb. He can play that physical game.
Yeah.
You know, something for me that I'm looking at in this series, these are two of the best possession teams in the playoffs right now. The Tampa Bay Lightning are the only team that's better than these two teams right now as far as expected goals and team Corsi 4%. So it's going to be really interesting. I think you're going to see much more of a back and forth series. And you saw that in some games in the Nashville Jets series, but you also saw the Nashville Predators go into that kind of trap checking game that you saw in Winnipeg when they won those games 4-0 and 4-1 in games 4 and 6. So I think you're going to definitely see, I think, more sustained zone pressure. It's going to be back and forth, and speed is always going to be a factor when you're talking about these two teams. And I think it's going to come down to a small margin of error. I think it's probably going to come down to what team has the better special teams, which goalie plays better. And I expect probably less lopsided games than we saw in the Jets-Predators series. But back to your question, the Jets are a more physical team, but I don't know necessarily if that's going to be the biggest factor. It might be a factor in some of the games, and I think the Golden Knights are going to try to stay away from that. They're going to try to stay out of the penalty box, even though their penalty kill has been much better than the Jets. They know that the Jets have a really good power play. The Jets scored 4 power play goals against the Golden Knights in those 3 games. Absolutely. If the Jets can, you know, get on the Predators, and that's going to be a big key for the Jets. They're going to want to try to keep the puck behind the Golden Knights and absolutely, you know, use those big bodies and try to control the Golden Knights in that way. But I don't know if it's going to necessarily be the biggest factor.
Just a note for Morning Skate for listeners. According to Ken Weeb, Connor Hellebuck is taking some shots, which he's been, it's an optional for the team. And no Enstrom or Byfuglien, and Little, Lowry, and Stastny are all taking maintenance as well. So you never really learn anything from these Morning Skates, really. They just kind of go out there and doodle around. And,
yeah.
And you're not really going to really be able to gain anything because the coaching staff isn't going to tell you anything. So the reality is you never really learn if a player's in or out until pregame warm-up.
Yeah, the only thing that's interesting about the Morning Skates is sometimes if a player you expect would stay on the ice longer, because the scratches usually stay on the ice longer, if one of those guys leaves the ice early or with the quote-unquote regulars.
Well, it's like when Hendricks did that.
Prior to game 6, you know, maybe there's some insight there or a little bit into maybe somebody's, you know, game time decision.
Yeah.
Or but, you know, obviously we, you know, the cone of silence is up everywhere when it comes to the Winnipeg Jets, when it comes to the Stanley Cup playoffs. Nobody says much at all when it comes to the health of players. Let's come back. We'll do some more on the preview of the Jets and the Golden Knights. We'll look at the defensive battle. We'll talk about special teams and goaltending as well. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Ehlers trying to dance it out of the corner. Myers in from the line. Sharp angle by Myers. Score! Tyler Myers from the goal line sneaks it past Pekka-Rinne, and the Winnipeg Jets have a 1-0 lead here in the opening period.
The beginning of the end for the Nashville Predators from Thursday night's Game 7. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. This segment is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. The defense matchup between these two teams is an interesting one, primarily from my perspective of the offense that the Winnipeg Jets get from the back end, led by Dustin Byfuglien, but we've had contributions this series or these playoffs from Tyler Myers, as we just heard, Jacob Trouba before, versus the Golden Knights, which gets very little from their back end in terms of offense. The Jets have 25 points in their 12 games from defenders, whereas the Golden Knights have 15 points total from their defensemen in their 10 games that they've played in the playoffs. How much of a factor do you think offense from the back end, or a lack thereof when it comes to the Golden Knights' perspective, is going to be a factor in this series?
I think it's absolutely going to be a factor. And we talked about it a little bit last segment and before we had Ted Wyman on. When you look at the Jets and how they were able to get some contributions from their defensemen. And Roman Josi, guys, was a big shock, I think, for all of us. He wasn't as good as we thought he was going to be. PK Subban was clearly their best offensive defenseman.
Mm-hmm.
Forget the fact that the Nashville Predators had problems in their own zone defending, especially on home ice. But this Vegas back end is clearly not as good as Nashville's back end. I mean, you don't have a Roman Josi. You don't have a PK Subban. Nate Schmidt, for me, is a defenseman that got better year after year with the Washington Capitals. And he has formed a really good top pair there with Braden McNabb. I talked about that earlier. And Shea Theodore, a guy who didn't play early on in the season, he has been very good on that second pair with Derek Englund. And Colin Miller had a breakout year on your third pair. And Lucas Ibiza, who missed more than half of the season, Drew, he's back in the lineup. He actually wasn't healthy for the first round against the LA Kings. He's back, and he's on the third pair. Lucas Ibiza and Colin Miller actually is a pretty decent third pair. So really, when you're talking about offensive defensemen, I mean, Nate Schmidt and Colin Miller are your two best offensive defensemen. And after that, I mean, you're not going to expect a lot of offense from a guy like Derek Englund. But, you know, Lucas Ibiza has a pretty good shot. He can contribute, but especially on the right side that the Jets have with Buff, Myers, and Trouba. I mean, that right side is much better than the Golden Knights' right side. And I think overall, as a group, the Jets have more weapons, and quite frankly, they're better defensively. But the Golden Knights can move the puck quickly. I mean, this is a group that is built around speed. I mean, Derek Englund's not a guy that you expect to be the quickest guy, but when you're talking about Schmidt and McNabb and Theodore and Sabiza and Miller, it's a mobile back end. But if you're going to break down the forwards and the defensemen and the goalies, I still think the Jets have the edge, but I don't think it's as big as some people are making it out to be.
Dave?
Well, I mean, the one thing I would point out is that this Golden Knights team did average 4 goals a game the last series against San Jose. They were very good. 4 goals a game, sorry, against San Jose. I mean, obviously that was impacted by the 7-0 game one win. That definitely helps pad the stats.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm with Hez. Like, I just don't think, I think you, this is a team that is better than, they're more, I mean, look, let's be realistic. They have 8 wins and only 2 losses in the playoffs so far. This is a team that has surprised everyone. It continues to surprise everyone. So I think you underestimate them at your own peril. I think that we can trot out all these numbers, but I look at the way they've played as a unit. And it's ironic that, you know, these guys don't have years of play. It's not like a Blake Wheeler or Mark Scheifele where they have that comfort of playing with each other for that long. So to me, it's amazing that they've put these guys together, the misfits as they're calling themselves, and they've done as well as they have.
And I think a key matchup to look out for, boys, and I think we assume that Paul Maurice, especially with last change, would love to have the Lowry line up against the Carlson line. And we'll see what happens. I mean, you're not always able to get that line matchup that you want. But I think a real interesting matchup, because we think Nate Schmidt and Braden McNabb are going to be up against the Scheifele line.
Sure.
You're going to have that second pair of Shea Theodore and Derek Englund up against the Stastny line. Right? And we talked about Shea Theodore, good young defenseman. He can move the puck. Englund's a physical defenseman, but he's not the fastest player. So when you have speedy guys like Nikolai Ehlers, you know, you can maybe take advantage of that. And I would expect the Eric Halla line to be matched up against the Stastny line. And for me, the Stastny line is better. It's a bit of a mismatch. Halla, Perron, Neal, you've got some veterans there. You've got some physical players. You know, David Perron, I think, has had an underrated year. And he scored a big goal against the Jets, if you remember, in overtime. We talked about it the last game. It was
sure.
Perron that got that goal, but he's kind of that forgotten guy on the second line for the Golden Knights. But for me, the Stastny line is clearly more skilled. But that's going to be a key matchup as well. In addition to Schmidt and McNabb on the top pair paired up against Scheifele's line, in this series, the way Shea Theodore and Derek Englund play, because we know how important depth is, and as you go down to that third pair, Lucas Sabiza and Colin Miller, you say, okay, you know, these guys are both cast off. Sabiza used to play for the Ducks. Colin Miller used to play for the Bruins. But it's a very underrated third pair, in my opinion. I think the Jets will win the series. I realize we're going to get into our predictions later on the show, Drew. I still am picking the Jets to win the series. I'm just saying, I don't think it's going to be a cakewalk.
No, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I don't think it'll be a cakewalk either. From the Jets' perspective, safe to assume that you want that Paul Maurice wants Morrissey and Trouba against Marchessault, Carlson, and Smith as much as possible.
Absolutely.
Just that he saw, because we saw that last series with that line playing up against Forsberg and Johansson.
Well, they're your shutdown pair.
Right.
I mean, that's you're always going to want to put them against their top pairing, just top line, simply because they've been so effective at shutting down the opposition. So to me, like those, the Morrissey and Trouba have really, again, we're talking about players elevating their games, and they're not.
They were both really good in Game 7.
Oh yeah, that's what I mean. And like we're talking about guys who, you know, again, sometimes if you don't get the point, like Byfuglien's getting all the points, and Byfuglien's been very good throughout the playoffs. But again, I think that Trouba and Morrissey have played exceptionally well and continue to do so, because even though their role isn't as sexy as scoring goals and setting up big plays on the power play, although Trouba plays more power play time, that, you know, you don't, sometimes it's unheralded. But I think that, you know, what they're able to do, especially against, you know, top line opposition, has been phenomenal.
The goaltending battle. I mean, we know how important it was in round two. Marc-Andre Fleury has been unbelievable in the playoffs so far, albeit I would put a bit of an asterisk there in saying he played against two teams that don't have great offenses.
L.A. more so.
L.A. more
so. San Jose's a pretty good offensive team.
But they were without Joe Thornton also. So, I mean,
well, they were pretty much without Evander Kane.
That too. So, I mean, they were without some key offensive contributors there. They haven't played an offense
and
as
I'm
good.
And I'm referring to the injury, obviously.
Obviously, yeah. They haven't played an offense as good as Winnipeg's in the first two
Absolutely.
Rounds. How do the Jets make I mean, I asked Ted Wyman this question about, you know, 40 minutes ago. How do the Jets make Marc-Andre Fleury's life more difficult, more miserable? I mean, he's still Marc-Andre Fleury, still a tremendous goaltender, but how do the Jets rattle him, for lack of a better word?
I don't think you're going to change much. I mean, the obvious answer, Drew, you're going to get from a lot of, you know, hockey people is you have to get as much traffic in front of him, because if he sees the puck, he's going to make the save. Another point that I think is being lost with Marc-Andre Fleury and how well he's played throughout the regular season and in these playoffs is how well he played during last year's playoffs for the Penguins. People forget Matt Murray came in later on in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Fleury got them to a certain point, and he was excellent. He has the 3 Stanley Cups, so he obviously has the experience edge. I don't think that's going to be as big of a factor maybe as some people think it's going to be. But, yeah, obviously, Drew, you're going to try to get traffic in front of him when those point shots are getting through and all of that, but I don't think they're going to run him or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Jets have been successful offensively against every single team they've played this year. You're obviously going to have a scouting report on Marc-Andre Fleury, just like they had a scouting report on Pekka Rinne and Devan Dubnyk. You know where his weak spots are. You know where his strengths are. Marc-Andre Fleury is a goalie that can play the puck really well, similar to Pekka Rinne. And I think that's something that wasn't talked about a lot. I think the Jets did a pretty good job of keeping the puck away from Pekka Rinne.
Mm-hmm.
He might be the best puck-handling goalie since Marty Brodeur. And I think the Jets made that a non-factor by keeping the puck away from him. So same thing with Marc-Andre Fleury. You don't want to let him play the puck too much behind his net. But I think it's those simple kind of hockey cliches where you want to try to get as much traffic in front of him. You want to make sure that you're getting on those second and third rebounds and all of that. But he's a great goaltender. He doesn't have a lot of weaknesses. We talked about it. He was having a great playoffs this year, and he had a great regular season. So, I mean, the goaltending battle is going to be fascinating because right now you might give the edge to Hellebuck, but some might give the edge to Fleury the way he played in the first two rounds. But as you mentioned, the Jets are much better offensively than the Ducks and the Sharks, so I don't think those numbers are going to stay at a .950 save percentage and below 2 goals against.
It seems unlikely. I'll tell you what, if they do, that means the Golden Knights have won the series, is what happens in that case. Worth pointing out Marc-Andre's record against the Winnipeg Jets in his last 9 games. Again, this goes back to his time with the Pittsburgh Penguins.
How much weight can you put into that then, right?
Probably not, but it's worth, it's worth a discussion or at least pointing out. 9-0-0 in his last 9 starts against Winnipeg, a 2.50 goals against average and a .911 save percentage. Of course, only one of those games has come as a member of the Golden Knights.
Would put zero stock into that.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying he's had success.
Say, they're all regular season games and
with a different team altogether.
Yeah. Jets are going to light him up tonight.
Dave, that's the battle to me, is that Connor Hellebuyck, first in the question entering the playoffs was about his experience. He settled that in the first round, and then can he be a big-time goaltender in the second round? Obviously, that question settled. He just seems so unflappable. The Jets will need him at his unflappable best going up against Marc-Andre Fleury.
Yeah, I mean, but the reality is we've seen that. This is who Connor Hellebuyck is. We've seen it through, when I covered him when he was with the Manitoba Moose. He's a pretty even-keel, unflappable guy. It's funny because sometimes people think that he's putting on a show when he's doing his post-game, but that really is who he is. That's just the kind of person Connor Hellebuyck is. He really doesn't allow this stuff to kind of get him too up or too down. So to me, I really wouldn't expect him to be too fazed by anything that happens. Like, he really has shown how comfortable he is in the net, and regardless of whether his team wins or loses, he's just able to put it behind him and move on to the next game. So, I mean, again, we talked about experience, but I mean, you've already won 2 playoff series. At this point, do we really need to be talking about experience still? Because the truth is, the 4 teams that are in the playoffs, remaining in the playoffs, including the Jets, of course, there's 1 Stanley Cup winner. Now, of course, on these teams, you have some individuals who have won the Stanley Cup. But the fact of the matter is, there's only one team that is the Tampa Bay Lightning, who won in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
So really, you're not looking...
Shout out to Nikolai Habibulin.
Yeah, the Bulin Wall. So to me, you're not really worrying about that sort of factoring in anymore. And all these guys have done things at high enough levels to just continue to not really be losing sleep over one bad play, one bad mistake. You just know that it's a 7-game series that allows you to offset anything. I made a mistake here. Well, that's fine. You're going to have games to make up for it. It's not a 1-game elimination where the pressure is as significant as it may be. And even in a 1-game elimination, Connor Hellebuyck was excellent in game 7.
Victoria Mariash of ESPN.com joins us next for more on the Jets and the Golden Knights and the NHL playoffs in general. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number 2 of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From ESPN.com, we're pleased to be joined by Victoria Matias. Victoria, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, good morning. My pleasure, guys. It's a super fun time of year, so it's always fun to talk about this stuff.
No, it certainly is a super fun time of year here in Winnipeg. Things are electric, as you might imagine. Victoria, I want to go back to an article posted on ESPN.com. I believe this was yesterday, if I'm not mistaken. You are the sole ESPN representative who thinks the Winnipeg Jets are going to be hoisting Lord Stanley's Cup come the middle of June.
You're going to be very popular in Winnipeg, Victoria.
Exactly. Exactly. Let me ask you, why? Two-part question. One, are you surprised that you were the only one of your ESPN colleagues to predict that? And two, why do you think the Jets are going to be Stanley Cup champions when the season comes to an end?
First of all, I was really surprised. I was really surprised that I was all by myself, you know, treading water, picking the Jets, especially there's about a dozen of us on that panel. Mm-hmm. And I know, I mean, different members, we talk, and there's a lot of respect for the Jets' depth, and a lot of people are really impressed by the team. So I know a lot of people are on with the Lightning. This is also, these picks were made before last night. I wonder if things would be a little bit different today. But it was, I was a little bit surprised. And to answer your second, the second part of your question, I was on the Predators from the very beginning. I thought they were going to go all the way. And so just perhaps a little bit by default, I was always very impressed with everything that's going on with Winnipeg all season long. And now I guess I'm just shifting over to the team that beat them, and that beat them fair and square and beat them soundly, especially when it mattered in Game 7. So I think that's why I made that shift. I would have loved to see this as the Western Conference Final. I think a lot of people would have loved to see Winnipeg play Nashville in the Western Conference Final, but the format of the playoffs, it is what it is. So this is what we're left with. But, yeah, Jets all the way, and that's my professional opinion, and I'm not being a good Canadian.
Victoria, most Jets fans will tell you that there's still lots of room on the Jets bandwagon, the more the merrier. So I don't think any Jets fans are going to be upset that you're picking the Jets to win the Stanley Cup. You mentioned the Lightning in your answer there. Obviously, Washington takes Game 1 4-2 on the road, no Nicklas Backstrom. Were you surprised at how flat the Lightning looked, especially in the first two periods?
I suppose so. I don't know if maybe we should be as surprised because of just what happened in the last round when they played the first game against Boston, because this was just a carbon copy of that. They came out super flat against Boston as well. They lost as well, and then they rebounded. So maybe just the 5 days off. And also on the flip side, I was a little bit concerned, I didn't need to be, a little bit concerned from a Capitals point of view that maybe they would come out a little bit flat just having beat Pittsburgh, you know, making history for the first time, slaying the demon, whatever expression you want to use. I thought there might be a little come down there, and there wasn't at all. It was actually quite the opposite. They were super jazzed, and the Lightning were super flat and super sloppy, super slow. They couldn't connect on passes. It was just a disaster. The goaltending wasn't great, but that wasn't the only problem. It was just those first two periods were awful, but I think they're going to turn it around.
Victoria, just sticking with that series, how much do you think that Alexander Ovechkin has this series on his back? Like, the idea that this guy wants to win a Stanley Cup, and it's likely his best chance is either this year, well, probably this year at this point.
I mean, I think he's a difference maker. The fact that they won that game really handily without Nicklas Backstrom, without one of their best players, one of their top three players up front, Ovechkin is really, I don't know. Have you guys ever seen him play better? I mean, he's older now. He's been in the league for so many years now. And I think we're seeing the best that he has to offer. And he is so invested, and he is so passionate, and he really wants to take it all the way. But I'm not going to take anything away either from Braden Holtby. Other than Marc-Andre Fleury, Braden Holtby has been the best goaltender in the playoffs, and especially to come in after you weren't even given the start at the very beginning. So my two difference makers on that team are Alex Ovechkin up front. You still have Kuznetsov, I mean, who's no hack. But Ovechkin up front, and then having Holtby play as well as he has been playing, it's made a big difference.
Victoria Matias is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're talking about the Stanley Cup playoffs. Victoria, in your previous answer, you mentioned Braden Holtby and you mentioned Marc-Andre Fleury. Obviously, Fleury's having a terrific playoff so far for the Golden Knights, but he hasn't played an offense, and the Golden Knights haven't played an offense yet as good as the Jets' offense how do you think the Golden Knights are going to respond to playing against an offense that can go as deep as the Jets can and roll line after line after line of scoring threat at them?
It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. I think now, I don't think that the Predators-Jets series quite lived up to billing. I think a lot of people were very excited about it, and I think now we should shift our attention and raise our expectations for this series, because these two teams are quite similar. They're similar in the sense that they're both high-flying, they're both very fast, they're both great on the forecheck, they're both very aggressive to the net, and they're also both, their transition games are in the neutral zone are phenomenal on both sides. So I think we're going to see very similar, very similar games from both sides. What I will say, the difference and the edge, so it will be, I agree with you, it will be interesting to see how Marc-Andre Fleury handles that. What I think I'll give Winnipeg the edge with is what you just mentioned, is their depth up front. I mean, the top line for Vegas with William Karlsson and Marchessault, they've been phenomenal, but then it does really peter off, especially when you get to the third and fourth line. As great as this team has been all season, it still doesn't match up with the Jets. I mean, when you have a third line centered by Brian Little and you've got Matthew Perreault, who thank goodness is healthy enough, and all the way down, there is so much depth, and I think it's going to be difficult. I think Vegas is going to have at least the toughest time they've had all playoffs, that's for sure.
Victoria, I think everyone's expecting Mark Scheifele, Blake Wheeler, Paul Stastny to continue their strong play in the Western Conference Final, and same thing goes for that top line, as you mentioned, William Karlsson, mm-hmm. Jonathan Marchessault, Riley Smith. But is there a player on either team that you're looking to as possibly being a breakout player for either team in this series?
Breakout player. I was going to mention, before you just finished that sentence, I was going to mention I think that Dustin Byfuglien is going to be the X factor in this series, but he's certainly not a breakout player. So I'll go with Kyle Connor. I think Kyle Connor has gotten better, has become better as every game. Every game he's been a little bit better. And that's to be expected for such an inexperienced player, right? I mean, this is his first go-around. So, I'm looking to Kyle Connor on Winnipeg's side to be perhaps a difference maker that, you know, it's just, this is all new to him. And we're already very impressed with what he's accomplished so far, especially in the last series.
Victoria, in your neck of the woods, there's a little bit of news. It's non-playoff related, but Kyle Dubas was named the general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs. What do you think of the hiring, and what kind of impact do you think he's going to have on this team? And also, what do you think his first move will be for the Toronto Maple Leafs?
I have no idea. It's been a very dramatic week here in Toronto. And that certainly was, I mean, we were all expecting to hear this announcement. I don't know that necessarily we were expecting to hear it yesterday. However, I mean, this is generally, anybody who feigns shock or surprise at this announcement either hasn't been paying attention or they're just angry about it, because this plan was laid out on the table from the get-go. From 4 years ago and especially 3 years ago, this was all part of the Shanna plan. He was going to work under Lou and work aside Mark Hunter, and then this, you know, young brain out of the OHL, and then after he worked with the Marlies as well, he was supposed to be, you know, moved into the role, and now he's there to develop this team long-term. This is not, I mean, he's signed for 5 years. They want to have him around forever, and hopefully that brings about sustained success here in Toronto. Some people find there's a good portion of Leafs Nation that is concerned about his youth and inexperience. I mean, the guy's 32 years old, but if you look at him, he could pass for 25 or 26. So when you're moving, when you're shifting from the old guard, Lou Lamoriello, who, you know, is basically that, and you're shifting to this new young guy, and you hear all these words like, oh, he's in analytics and he likes to mine data and he's a numbers guy and all the rest of it, and we don't know really anything about him and he doesn't have any experience in the NHL as being a GM. So there's a lot of, I don't know if suspicion is really the word, but everybody I think is taking a step back in Toronto and with the let's wait and see. But I will say this, if he does enjoy success, if he does improve this team and take them from a very good team to an excellent team to a contending team to eventually a Stanley Cup winning team, if he does manage to do that, nobody around here is going to care. They're not going to care if he's 32 years old or 12 years old. They're not going to care what he looks like, and they're not going to care how he goes about and does it. So, first move, He needs to improve the Leafs' defense. So somehow or another, it's whether it's through the draft, less likely, or through free agency, or through making a trade, or through player development up through the ranks, somehow or another, the Leafs have to have a stronger defense in October than they do right now, and that will be a very, very big first step.
I would love to see a 12-year-old general manager.
like the Doogie Howser, but out of the medical community, right, in the NHL instead.
No, Victoria, just sticking with the Leafs here, and you mentioned, I think everyone will point to the Leafs and their need for a top-four defenseman, but he has a lot of other work to do. When you look at James Van Riemsdyk, he's a pending UFA.
Mm-hmm.
Tyler Bozak is a pending UFA. I mean, there are some players, a guy named Austin Matthews, he's going to need that long contract,
yep.
Probably going to be signed to an 8-year contract. Kyle Dubas doesn't have an easy road in front of him, does he?
Not at all. And I think maybe that's why Brendan Shanahan and the rest of the Leafs organization has decided to take this, because this Dubas has done things a little bit differently. He's been creative in the past, as we saw when he was GM of the Sioux, and then again with the Marlies. And he's done very well with, you know, finding young talent and finding obscure talent. And he's going to have to be creative for just the reasons that you outlined, because they're going to sign Austin Matthews to an 8-year deal. They're going to sign Nylander, and there's a salary cap in place. And without a salary cap, it wouldn't matter. But he's going to have to fit all those key pieces in, improve the defense, you know, re-sign all the young talent that they want to keep, and then make some very tough decisions about who they have to get rid of. I mean, James Van Riemsdyk is an obvious candidate. So, so I think that's why they're taking a very different path. It's just the fact that it's interesting times in Leafs land, and there are many different considerations on the table, and so here's some fresh eyes and here's a fresh perspective, and let's see how this works.
Victoria Matiash covers the NHL for ESPN.com. She's the Winnipeg Jets' number one fan, thinks they're going to hoist Lord Stanley's Cup. Victoria, thanks very much for joining us this morning.
Oh, thanks a lot, you guys.
Take care. When we come back, more on the Jets and the Golden Knights. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets Game Day on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Wheeler plays it back up top to Buffalo. The line A. Saros to save. Rebound. Score! Paul Stastny bangs in a rebound of a Patrick Line A shot. Power play goal, Jets. It's 4-1, Winnipeg.
Jets got all sorts of goals on Thursday night. They got goals from defensemen. They got power play goals. They got an even strength goal from Paul Stastny. That was the fourth goal before Mark Scheifele's empty netter made it the 5-1 final. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live here on TSN 1290 as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets Game Day. And this segment is brought to you by Keener Jerseys, specializing in customization services and branded team apparel. Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom at 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. Special teams battle is going to be an interesting one between these two teams, gentlemen, as they both have been quite good on the special teams during the regular season. The Jets' power play has been better than the penalty kill in the playoffs, and conversely for the Golden Knights, their penalty kill has been better than the power play during the playoffs. We saw PK Subban do a lot of damage with that point shot during the previous series. How do you think the special teams battle between these two teams is going to play out? And do you think the Jets can keep that 25% rate working on the power play that we've seen during the playoffs so far?
Yeah, it's a really good question, Drew. I think that these two teams' special teams are very close. And you mentioned that the Golden Knights' penalty kill has been phenomenal in the first two rounds against the Kings and the Sharks. And yeah, the Jets' penalty kill did struggle, I think, in the series against the Predators, more so in the series against the Predators than the series against the Minnesota Wild. But I don't think that you could say that either team has a big advantage. I would give the advantage to the Jets' power play. And, you know, if you think about it, the Jets winning those three games in Nashville by a combined score of 15-4 without a power play that was really clicking. I'm not saying that the power play was horrible, Dave, but the power play was definitely not, I would say, a big factor for the Jets in winning those games in Nashville. considering that they didn't have that power play clicking, just think about what the scores would have been if the power play was going, right? And I think a big factor in Game 6 in Winnipeg, the Jets getting those three power plays, Pierre LeBrun actually wrote about this, you know, the Jets not scoring on any of those three power plays was a big factor in the Jets not winning that game. So the Golden Knights have some dangerous players on the power play. The Jets have some dangerous players on the power play. I mean, it can always be a factor. Mm-hmm. I think the Jets, you know, at times ran into some discipline issues. There were some bad calls, especially in Game 7. And I thought the Predators did a really good job of staying out of the penalty box, even though they were the most penalized team during the regular season. So it's always going to be a factor, but I don't know if either team has a huge advantage. That's just my opinion, and the numbers, I think, bear it out. As we talked about before, I mean, you give the slight advantage maybe to the PK of the Vegas Golden Knights, but the PK for the Jets was really good during the regular season. I think those numbers are going to get better for the Jets. So, you know, I maybe give the slight edge to the Jets, actually.
What's interesting about the PK and the PP, the special teams during a best-of-seven series, is that, you know, during the regular season, you have your power play or your penalty kill set up, and it doesn't differentiate from game to game, because every team, you only play a team, you know, once, and then you move on to a different team, and you don't really game plan or change your special teams depending on who you're playing. Whereas in a best-of-seven series, you play the same team over and over and over again, so you might make some changes to your special teams depending on what the other team is throwing at you.
Another thing to mention, Drew, is, you know, and this hasn't been talked about enough, the Jets are completely healthy right now.
They certainly have their ideal lineup. I mean, whether or not they're 100% healthy is,
I'm just saying, I mean, there are no players skating in non-contact jerseys.
That's right.
And my point is that Joel Armia and Matty Perreault, who were not in the lineup for, you know, certain games of these first two rounds, obviously Perreault was out longer than Armia. But Perreault and Armia, Dave, are guys that you can put out there on the second power play. I mean, we know who goes out on the first power play for the Jets. You got Scheifele, Wheeler, Lyonnais, Byfuglien, Stastny. The Jets' first power play unit, in my opinion, is better than the Golden Knights' first power play unit.
Yeah.
And I think the Jets can put out some excellent penalty killers out there as well against the Golden Knights' top power play. But especially when you get into those second power play units and you can put out Brian Little, Matthew Perreault, Joel Armia, you can put out, you know, Jacob Trouba. I think they do have the advantage, and I think even though the power play numbers haven't been there so far in the playoffs, it wasn't a factor because the Jets did most of their damage at 5-on-5. I think I would give the slight advantage just based on skill for the Jets.
Let me ask you this, Dave. I meant to ask you this in the previous segments when we've been talking about the series. Are you expecting that you're going to see Tanev, Lowry, and Armia together because they were so effective in Game 7, and then Kopp with Little and Perreault? You know, as opposed to the TLC line, as they've been called, they played together for a while. It seemed like that line was more effective with Armia there and with Kopp up on that other line.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, you kind of go with a if it ain't broke, don't fix it mentality. Sometimes I think that probably works for Coach Maurice. And my suspicion is he, you know, it is interchangeable, but at the same time, you're really not losing much, right? They've shown that they can play effectively together. But yeah, no, I mean, I think you're probably going to see that configuration because it's worked. And I think that he has a lot of confidence in those guys. And again, you know, it speaks to something as he was talking about earlier, is just the depth of the Jets forward group. And it just they come at you in waves. And really, there's so much that each one of these lines can do. And so they're all so effective at what it is that they do. So to me, you know, the Jets really do have the edge. And really, if you play a clean game, you almost have to expect as that the power play is going to get fired up eventually because it wasn't that effective previously.
Yeah, and, you know, what are we talking about here? I mean, you know, we mentioned the Golden Knights' penalty kill was excellent in the first two rounds, and it's at a better percentage right now than the Jets. But when you're talking about the regular season, the Jets had the ninth best penalty kill in the league at 81.8%, and the Golden Knights were at 81.4%. So, I mean, it's a small sample size. The Golden Knights have the second-best penalty kill in the playoffs, and the Jets are at 75%. So I think you'd expect them to be closer to 80%. But again, it can have, I think, a bigger factor in a series, Drew, when the games are closer and a power play goal can determine a game.
I don't want to keep beating a dead horse, but I do think there is...
Well, PETA would have a problem with that.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to beat a live horse for that matter either.
They'd really have a problem with that.
I do think that the fact that the Golden Knights are going to be playing against a much better offensive team in the Jets than they had in the first two rounds is a storyline, at least to start. I think everything the Golden Knights have done so far is tremendously impressive. but I do think that they are stepping up in weight class, because at no point in time...
Well, they're also playing a team that has now defeated the President's Trophy champion, when you knew that the Predators were going to have to be defeated in order for the Jets to go to the Western
Conference
Final. That's
my point. Vegas played two teams in the Kings and the Sharks that you never really thought were Stanley Cup contenders this year. I mean, the Sharks were better.
Did you think the Golden Knights were going to be Stanley Cup contenders?
No, but when the playoffs started, you never, you know, you didn't think that the Kings, yeah, you know, have the horses to make a run, or the Sharks are really a legitimate contender. Whereas now they're playing against a different
team. Joe Thornton and a healthy Evander Kane, maybe.
Maybe, but they didn't. So I'm saying the Golden Knights are now playing against a healthy Winnipeg Jets team that just knocked off the President's Trophy winning Nashville Predators, and you are playing against a better team than the Golden Knights have faced so far in these playoffs. Now, I'm not saying the Jets are going to walk all over the Golden Knights, because I certainly don't think that's going to be the case. In fact, I'll give you my prediction coming up here momentarily. But I do think that what the Golden Knights have done in the first two rounds cannot be translated into this round as evidence to how this series is going to play out. With that in mind, your predictions, please, gentlemen.
This is going to come as a bit of a surprise, I think, to many people. I'm taking the Jets in five.
Wow. So you do think it's going to be one-sided?
I do think it'll be one-sided. And, you know, I should admit, I did take Nashville in seven games. And, you know, that prediction was looking pretty good. But again, I'm not making that prediction as a fan. I mean, I was hoping the Winnipeg Jets won the series, but, you know, I have to be an unbiased analyst here. So I did take the Predators in seven games. I was wrong, but mm-hmm. I was right in that it went to seven games. You know, and again, I should qualify this by saying I am wrong very often.
Very often.
But I don't think this is going to be as long of a series as the last series. So I'm going to take the Jets in five. I think they're going to win their games here at home. They're going to win their two games at home. And I think the Jets are going to steal one of the games in Vegas. And I think next Sunday, they are going to finish it off and win the series in five.
David Minuk.
Well, that's a tough one to follow up, but I'm going to go Jets in six. I think it'll be a little bit. I think Vegas, again, I just don't think that they should be taken lightly, not seeing that as he is, but I just think that I see them winning at least two games in the series.
And I'll wrap it up. I also echo what you said, Dave. I think it's Jets in six. I don't think the Golden Knights are going to go out meekly. Not necessarily that five games is meekly, because who knows if those are all close games or
what
not.
What about Meek Mill?
Yeah, that's beyond my realm of usual comprehension, believe it or not. But I think the Jets in six, I think that the offense that the Jets will throw at the Golden Knights line after line after line will eventually become too much for the Golden Knights. And I do think, as you know, we've been saying really all season long, everyone's been waiting for their Cinderella season to end. I think it ends this series, the Jets in six over the Golden Knights and off to the Stanley Cup final.
It's bedtime for Cinderella, Drew.
When we come back, Ben Rabbe is going to join us. We'll talk about the Capitals and the Lightning coming up this hour, and throughout the rest of the show, we'll also have the audio from Jets head coach Paul Maurice. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.